Your reaction first to that video?
Well, horror, absolute horror at this brutal, what appears to be a brutal execution. And it just is one more example in a catalogue of brutality by this organisation. The reports coming out of Iraq and Syria of the atrocities that have been committed against groups, minorities, whole communities in areas that they've taken control of are completely horrifying and shocking, and really are driving the international community's effort to support the Iraqis and the Kurds in pushing back against this evil organisation.
And the executioner in that video had a British accent. What should we read into that?
Well, obviously, on the face of it, it appears to have been a British person. Now, we'll have to do some more analysis to make quite certain that that is the case. But we've been saying for a very long time that there are significant numbers of British nationals in Syria, increasingly in Iraq. And one of the reasons why what is going on in Syria and Iraq is a direct threat to our own national security is the presence of significant numbers of our nationals who may at some stage seek to come back to the UK with the skills, the tradecraft that they've learned working with these terrorist organisations, potentially posing a threat to our domestic security here in the UK.
And the point that the head of the Metropolitan Police, Bernard Hogan Howe, made, that more of them was that more of them could return and pose a threat to our security if Islamic State begins to lose battles in Iraq and Syria. So, in other words, they're better off over there than here.
Well, I'm afraid I think it's heads we win, tails we lose in this. If the Islamic State, so-called, becomes established in an area of Syria and Iraq, it will undoubtedly use it as a base for launching attacks on the West. It will undoubtedly send its fighters out to attack Western targets. Equally, if it gets pushed back, some of these people will return to their countries of origin. It's not just the UK, it's all European countries, Australia, the United States, other Arab countries. We will see these people going back and potentially carrying on their fight in our own homelands.
Do we have a policy to stop them?
Yeah, we do. We have a number of policies. We have policies aimed at deterring people at risk of radicalisation from being radicalised and going out to Iraq and Syria. We have capabilities to monitor people travelling to those areas and to provide surveillance on what they are doing while they're there. And of course, we have powers to intercept them and arrest them when they return, if they do return, and they can be prosecuted in the UK for things that they have done while they are in the Middle East.
But you will know that many people whose views we should take seriously have made the point over the last weeks that there is a worrying lack of clarity about our strategy in the Middle East.
Well, our strategy regarding ISIL is very clear. We need to contain it. We need to push it back. We need to counter the poisonous ideology that it promotes. And the way we're going to do that, we have difficulties in Syria because of the current situation in Syria. But in Iraq, we now have a prime minister designate who tells us that he's seeking to form an inclusive government. We have every reason to believe him and to support him in that. Once there is a credible Iraqi government that we can get behind, we and other members of the international community will support that government.
What's that mean? We'll support it. You said we need to push them back. Push them back how?
Well, the Iraqi government has made clear that it does not need and actually wouldn't welcome Western boots on the ground. That's not what's needed. What it does need is technical support, surveillance, intelligence assistance. It needs air cover, which the US is providing. It will need weapons and equipment as its forces regroup and seek to push ISIL back.
So let's try and pin you down a bit on that. If we send them equipment and if they need training to use that equipment, as they very well might, would we, for instance, be prepared to send soldiers to help them, or other service people, to help them use that equipment?
Well, it's certainly something that we would consider, providing training for equipment.
That's boots on the ground.
Not necessarily. The training doesn't have to be done in country.
But probably, to be realistic about it, you're not going to bring hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Iraqi troops over here at various stages, train them and send them back again. It doesn't work like that, does it?
Well, we're doing it with Libyans. We're bringing hundreds of Libyans.
Libya's a very different story. Libya is not coming under direct attack from an outfit like ISIL. There is a civil war. There's anarchy in Libya, but it's a very different situation from Iraq, isn't it?
Well, I'm just making the point that we're bringing hundreds of Libyan soldiers over here and training them in training camps in the UK. But equally, we could decide to put limited numbers of trainers into Baghdad, for example. We could train Iraqi trainers to go out and train the Iraqi security forces. We absolutely are prepared to consider requests for technical assistance, training support, advice, and so on.
And that so on includes surveillance flights, supplying intelligence.
Yes, we're already carrying out surveillance in support of our humanitarian mission in Iraq, and in principle, we could carry out surveillance flights in support of Iraqi government forces as they push back ISIL.
Having seen that video, you will know that ISIL regards anybody who supports their enemies, very loosely defined, as waging war on them. So therefore, we are effectively saying we are prepared to wage war on ISIL and have them wage war on us. That's the essence of it, isn't it, whether we like it or not?
Oh, look, it's far too late for that debate. We are very clear that we are utterly opposed to the evil ideology of this organisation
so
and the barbaric cruelty that they have displayed. We are opposed to them with every every breath in our body, and we will continue to oppose
right.
them. So, any kind of threat they make, that if we oppose them, they'll come after us. Frankly, we're long past that point. They are waging war on moderate Islamic opinion. They are waging war against the West, and we have to deal with them on that basis.
And one way of waging war on them would be, as it were, to team up with President Assad in Syria, because he is as opposed to them as we are. And there is an argument, it's been put forward by a predecessor of yours, as you know, Sir Malcolm Rifkin, that we should perhaps say, well, okay, we'll work with you.
Well, one of the observations I made on one of my earlier visits to the Middle East is that it's a part of the world where the old adage that my enemy's enemy is my friend simply doesn't apply. The politics of the Middle East are very complicated. In some cases, we will find ourselves coincidentally fighting people who are also being fought by people who we would not share any space with at all.
Right,
and
so
President
you're not ruling
Assad
out the possibility of some sort of liaison, I'm not sure what the right word is, you've supplied perhaps, with President Assad.
Well, I don't think we'll be having any liaison with President Assad, but it is perfectly possible that we will find we are fighting organisations which are also fighting against the Syrian regime, also fighting against the Iranians, for
right,
example.
So a relationship then, let's use the word that Malcolm Rifkin used, a relationship with people who are very nasty in order to eliminate people who are even nastier.
Well, I don't envisage us having any kind of relationship with the Assad regime, but that is not to say we may not find ourselves fighting common enemies.
Isn't the political reality in Britain now, in light of the Syrian vote, in Parliament, that you would have to go to Parliament to get support if this goes any further at all? Some people say you should already have recalled Parliament.
Well, I don't agree with that. I don't think there's been anything that we've done so far that has necessitated the recall of Parliament. But we have a clear convention. It was set out by the last government. It's been reiterated by this government that if British troops are going to be committed to combat, secrecy and timing permit it, we would expect Parliament to have an opportunity to debate any such decision before it was taken. And that remains our position. But at the moment, there is no proposal to commit British troops into combat. It's very clear that our partners in Iraq and Kurdistan are not asking for British boots on the ground. What they're asking for is supplies, material, ammunition, training, intelligence support, air cover.
And some special forces boots who are there already.
Well, we never comment on the disposition of indeed, British special forces.
Indeed, but that's the reality, and we all know that that is the reality, and therefore we are already involved.
Well, as I said, we don't comment on the disposition of British special forces anywhere in the world, and that will remain our policy.
In terms of the threat to the region, in terms of the threat to the wider world, in terms of the threat to this country, how dangerous is the Middle East now compared with how it has been during the last, let's take, 5 years?
Well, the Middle East remains a region of significant instability. There's the situation in Libya, of course, the continuing tension between Israel and the Palestinian territories, and then the situation in Syria and Iraq. The emergence of ISIL as a successor organization to AQ with an absolutely poisonous ideology, hoovering up moderate jihadist, if you can have such a thing as moderate jihadist activity in Syria, drawing support from the more moderate Syrian opposition, is a major challenge for primarily to the region, but also to the West, partly because they are trying to establish a caliphate from which they would launch attacks against the West, and partly because they have among their number significant elements of Western fighters.
So Al-Qaeda, AQ, as you describe it, they are in the kind of second rank of our enemies now, are they, in relation to this other bunch?
I think we see a continuum between Al-Qaeda and this emerging ISIL organization. Elements of the leadership of Al-Qaeda have merged into ISIL. This is a successor organization. These organizations wax and wane, and ISIL is currently the sort of cheerleader for the extremist Islamist organization.
Just a final thought. Is it seemly that the Prime Minister should be on holiday showing us his sandals and all the rest of it while there is this going on in the Middle East, while there is this threat to all of us?
Well, I think, we're all entitled to a break. Indeed. And we all operate a lot more effectively for having had one. But the Prime Minister is only a couple of hundred miles down the road in the UK. He's in constant contact with his ministers, with his officials, throughout the day. It's no different from him being in Scotland or Northern Ireland or Wales on a visit during a time when Parliament's sitting.
Well, one imagines when you're on holiday, you're thinking of other things than work. I know that's the point about a holiday, isn't it? You take your mind off things.
Well, I'm afraid if you're the Prime Minister, particularly at a time like this, you have to remain pretty focused on what's going on, and this Prime Minister does remain pretty focused on what's going on.
Philip Hammond, many thanks.
Thank you.